Welcome to Tales Beneath the Surface. Available on all respectable podcast platforms. Just so you know, this episode contains mature themes and upsetting scenes. You have been warned. You have been warned. You have been warned. You have been warned. The Esoteric Adventures of Arthur the Headless Boy. Episode 26. Bully. Arthur stood defiant.
Just because I've got no edge, don't make me no different from you,
he said boldly, and somewhat miraculously, considering he had no mouth or vocal cords.
My dad don't have no edge, and neither did Grandad. I'm from a long, proud line of men with no heads.
The amorphous blob, whose name is Bully, had formed a ripe crescent of angst and vinegar around Arthur, pinning him against the back wall.
Crumbs,
thought Arthur. He had nowhere to run this time. A smear of Bully in front of him. And behind him, a brick wall with an incongruous map of Denmark mounted upon it. Normally, mathematics class would have been a haven for Arthur. He found comfort in all those numbers and in Miss Holdenbrook's calm, unwavering dedication to perfectly sharpened pencils. But not today. Miss Holdenbrook was off sick today due to a nasty case of sepsis from self-inflicted pencil wounds. The bully surged and undulated, tapping on its multiple mobile phones and picking its many noses. Arthur struggled to figure where one bully started and another finished. He even struggled to remember any of their names. Of course, there were taller ones and shorter ones, fatter ones and thinner ones, but they blurred into one clammy merge of poorly tied Halfwinds and Knots and Lynx Africa. To be fair, Arthur did not make it easy for Arthur. He was far from typical. If it wasn't his missing head, it was his jaunty, Edwardian fashion sense. His burgundy day cravat matched with a tailored herringbone morning coat that cascaded down to his knees where his shorts lived. His footwear, which his mother swore he would grow into eventually, were a pair of Oxfords, two sizes too big, and a set of matching Argyle socks. This, topped off with a brass-ringed monocle hung around his neck, that he swore he would get the hang of one day. There was absolutely no doubt that he looked a right Herbert.
How neck,
gargled one of the heads.
No hat.
The names came quick and fast.
Stump face.
Never helmet.
They were not great insults, considering the outlandish visage that was his missing head, but they hurt nonetheless. A point of order was raised briefly amongst the seething mass about setting up a writer's room for the sole purpose of crafting insults for Arthur, but it never came to pass. The writer's union were having none of it. Thoughts of escape clouded Arthur's mind, which was a trick unto itself, considering his apparent lack of any grey matter. Yes, of course. The innocuous map of Denmark. He imagined that if he hit Copenhagen just right, it would create an Arthur-sized breach big enough for him to escape. But would the people of Denmark ever forgive him? Unlikely. He could not afford to provoke another nation before his 8th birthday. Not after the diplomatic disaster that was Burundi. Ugh, Burundi. Escaping that mess had required contacting the Coptic Pope yet again. No, not this time. He would have to face the acne-ridden horde without theological support. Decided his next move would be a tactic borrowed from his beloved game of croquet. deflection. He also made a mental note not to mention croquet to any of the children in school. What with his obsession with taxidermy, his incessant playing of the cor anglais, and his smell, reminiscent of a rancid custard cream, adding croquet into the mix would be enough ammunition to arm a small partisan force. Arthur's arm shot up and pointed across the classroom.
Oh, what about Steve? He has odd socks on.
Multiple heads revolved as the gestalt flange of bullies stared back and forth between Arthur and Steve.
Seriously?
Scoffed one head.
Odd socks,
said another, bamboozled. Steve, who had just arrived through the classroom door, saw through Arthur's slowly collapsing ruse and froze.
Hi.
He was wearing mismatched socks. One bright pink and the other a faded green with tiny dinosaurs. His eyes widened upon realising he was now the focus of the bully's attention. He stammered.
I didn't want to be part of this. I just came for numbers.
And stealthily backed out of the room, hands raised in supplication, chanting the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come.
Ugh,
thy will be
drat!
Cursed Arthur as he glanced about the mathematics class, desperately looking for an option that did not involve diving out of the fourth floor window.
Why don't you ever pick on Samantha? She ain't got no torso!
Arthur blurted out during the mockery interval, hoping to direct attention to some other poor bastard. Samantha lifted her head from her book and hugged her crumpled coat close to her absent body. She did look a right shambles, though she was convinced she was totally styling it out.
Get bent, Arthur!
She shouted, despite her distinct lack of a ribcage, diaphragm, and any other organ stuff you normally need for talking.
Ugh, double drat,
Arthur muttered between gritted teeth.
Okay, hand it over,
said one of the larger masses.
Yeah, let's see that moolah,
said another growth. Arthur reached for his purse. Yes, purse. As I said earlier, Arthur did not make it easy for Arthur. Suddenly, the supply teacher, Mr. Chambers, burst into the room in a puff of chalk dust, pipe smoke, and serendipity. He had Steve by the scruff of the neck and carried him some 6 inches off the ground.
Ah, you there, child? Or children?
Ejaculated Mr. Chambers quizzically, taking in the bully's grotesque form, trying to decide whether it was singular or plural.
Stop picking on no head or... I mean, Arthur. It's not as faulty as sans bonds. Just look at Steve. He's wearing odd socks,
he said, holding Steve out at arm's length.
I'm just here for numbers.
Waffled Mr. Chambers. Arthur piped up.
Sir, I don't think it's right, like, to bully Steve to prove a point.
Oh, get bent, no head.
Mr. Chambers slumped into the chair at the front of the class, pulled out his copy of the Telegraph, and started to read.
It wasn't like this. What's happening? Why this? Why now? Please, don't laugh. No, please, no more.
Fiddlesticks,
thought Arthur. He almost had an out, but his pedantry had scuppered him yet again. In a flash, the bully grabbed for Arthur with his 1d4 flabby claw, pinned him to the wall, and squeezed.
Oh, you got quite the grips, strength, mate.
And squeezed.
Blimey.
And squeezed Arthur so hard a bit of poo came out. Then the quivering puddle of twisted forms attempted a multiple headbutt on Arthur. Big mistake.
Missed,
proclaimed Arthur as the bully's head struck Denmark.
The Danish never forgive,
squawked Arthur as he slid out of his morning coat and hit the floor like an agile sack of oats. He part scrambled, part belly crawled through the bully's legs towards the front of the classroom, tucking into an unnecessary combat roll he had learned in Scouts, and popped to his feet. He glanced at the doorway to the classroom. Escape. Sweet freedom. But no, he knew what he must do. His father had taught him many things. How to dance the Argentinian tango, how to tie a cravat so it's not so obvious that you don't have a head, and never, ever let a bully get the better of you. The squelching, gelatinous wall of sneers threw Arthur's coat aside, let forth a bowel-loosening screech, and charged.
You're dead,
claimed the mocking chorus, and surged towards Arthur. Arthur, quick as a shot, grabbed Miss Holdenbrook's stationery cup from her desk and began to throw the deadly sharpened pencils at the charging shot. One pencil. Such precision. Two more. That's got to hurt. And then three. The bully laughed as the fusillade of sharpened wood struck his puffed-out chests to no avail.
I'll kick your head in.
I'd like to see you try.
Get in the body.
No, not my body. That's my only weakness.
What's in his case?
No, not my coron clay.
So the bully hit him.
Oh, that smarts.
And hit him. To be perfectly honest,
it's lucky I'm fictional.
Arthur was having a rotten time. Luckily, he had no active neurons or pain receptors to speak of due to his distinct lack of head. So, he didn't feel a thing.
No, I can still feel this because I've still got a central nervous system.
Oh, shut up, no head. Next week on The Esoteric Adventures of Arthur the Headless Boy, episode 27, The Wheat Threshing Incident.
Oh, come on!
Hello again, dear listeners. I bet you thought you'd got rid of me. Well, sorry to disappoint. Here I am, like a stain that won't wash out. Ah, how about that story? It was borderline nonsensical. I don't mind a bit of whimsy, but that was almost too much. Almost like something's hiding behind it. And everyone was laughing at Arthur, that poor sweet boy. Are you laughing, listener? Laughing at the folly of a child? I can almost hear you. Now, let's move on to something else. Something more fun. Yes, fun. How about sports? Yes, sports. All those strapping men playing kickball and whiff-waff, laughing heartily away. Oh, glory be, yes. I do so love sports. Half time.
You see, it's all about strategy. Strategy. Long, short, Tall, thin, wide, fat, spiked, smooth, ridged, ballooned. It's strategy. Strategy, strategy, strategy. That's all it is. Simple, really. I can't believe you need another run through all this. We're winning. What's the problem?
The room filled with stony silence. Eight rows of dour faces stared at the front of the room, the presenter and his presentation. He was grotesque. Fat, bloated rolls spilled out from a torn T-shirt. The word coach barely legible under the stains. Layered memories of whiskey and barbecue sauce broken up by a scattershot of charred-edged pits left by hot rocks from the pipe clamped between his teeth. The exposed skin bristled in the air-conditioned room, each hair beaded with sweat. His legs were mostly bare, broken veins lumping a bulbous tube map across them, capped by faded jean cutoffs that cut a ravine across his arse, twisting a tattooed kiss into a grimace. His ensemble was bottomed out by ashy socks, stuffed into piss-stained tennis shoes, the laces done up in an incongruous, tidy bow. He looked out at his team, taking in their wooden faces, and noticed the pipe pointing out at the room. His bloodshot eyes crossed with surprise as the butane torch in his right hand lit and lifted, while his left hand tilted the bowl. His chest expanded inevitably as his lungs inhaled and the ruby-red cherry glowed like Santa's cracked-out reindeer finally falling from the sky.
That's good.
He exhaled, standing there drooling as the smoke cleared, revealing glassy eyes under his tattered cap toppling away as he fell backwards through the chalkboard and into the wall behind. A moment passed, then another, and another, before the room exploded with panicked shouting and scraping chairs crashing against each other and onto the floor.
Oh, fuck! Was anyone listening to any of that shite? He smashed the fucking board. Oh, Christ, we're fucked. Fucking board's in pieces.
Help me with him. Quick. Quicker? I said quicker, you staggering streak of piss. Grab his legs, you two. The same fucking side, you gormless pair of slapping ball bags. Here we go. All right, lads, we're set. Here we go, lads. A one, a two, a heave.
There was a collective groan as the team rolled their coach onto his side. Their distended Moriarty belched contentedly, the sound rippling across the floor and shaking the ceiling's fluorescent bulbs in their cheap plastic sheaths. A piece of plaster around the size of a hubcap vibrated, cracked, swung out, held, and then fell, smashing over the side of his head, scattering plaster dust like fingerprint powder across the ruin of his face. A sliver stood proud in his ear, poking out beyond the cartilage, like a yard-long log left in baby's first porta-potty. It slipped out, tumbled down his face, and into the blood pooling around his satisfied lips.
How's the board looking? How's it fucking looking?
Oh, it's fucked, Ed. Oh, Christ. It's completely fucked. None of this makes any sense. The chalk's smeared from when he went through it. It's nothing but splinters.
Check his back. Did he rub off?
There's nothing. Nothing at all, just sweat and grime. What are we going to do, Ted? What are we going to do?
Keep it together. I said keep it together, he shouted over the sound of weeping. We're ahead, way ahead. We can do this. We just need to pull together and do it as a team.
But how do we do that?
The plaintive wail broke into hopeless sobs. 8-foot-tall players laid in heaps, jumbled together like cordwood. Desperately holding on, their arms full, bereft. Ted saw it was time for extreme measures. There were 5 minutes left on the clock before they were due back pitch side. No time to lose. He bent over the coach's prone and leaking form, listened for a moment, then straightened in sudden disgust as a violent belch left his lips, leaving them vibrating like a washing machine without its concrete counterweight.
Right. He's still alive then. All right, lads. Help me put him up against the wall. Dave, get a Sharpie and stick it in his hand. Gary, you still got your spike?
Yeah, of course, Ted. I got two. Primo Adrenochrome.
Grab one, quick. If this don't work, we're fucked anyway.
Working together, the team pushed, slipped,
sweated and swore to prop their coach on his knees facing the wall. A marker pen was jammed in his left hand as the clock opposite counted down to kick off.
Okay, lads. Hold him steady.
Shining needle in hand, brow glistening with sweat, Ted reached out to steady himself, staring down at the corded vessels in his coach's neck. Every eye in the room watched the point as it rose, then fell. A spray of scarlet celebrated the hit, and the coach erupted to his feet, screaming incoherently, scattering players left and right. The pen gripped in his meaty paw began scrawling oblique runes and esoteric diagrams across what was left of the plasterboard. The air crackled with energy. Static electricity jumped from shoulder to shoulder, danced between clenched teeth, left hair in porcupine spikes standing on end.
Strategy!
The fat man sang as eldritch horrors burst from the ceiling and the wall collapsed behind his giant fist. The players opened their mouths and cracked back their heads to welcome their supernatural pilot. Screaming as one, they ran through the rubble into the corridor and up the ramp towards the pitch where the crowd's frenzied shouts echoed and reinforced their own.
Finally coming to the field, we have the challengers. They're leading by 10, and my God, do they look angry.
Oh, that's right, Barry. I'm not sure what the hold-up in the pit was, but they were seconds from forfeiting the game. But they're here now, and God damn, do we have a game on our hands.
The second half was shorter than the first. The challengers raced up the steps onto the field, their passengers swelling their bodies. Their shouts blended into one cacophonous roar, a grinding shout, the sound of landslides and freak waves. Ted threw a fat finger at the other team, bent his head back and screamed. The pitch leapt beyond the audible in a glissando that slit the air. The opposite captain, his hand out, waiting for a shake, mewled in response. Blood poured from his nose before his head fell apart in a confetti of splintered brain and bone that spattered across his teammates' strips. Ted's team burst through the spray, taking their captain's keening for the starting whistle, closing swiftly with their stunned opposition. They moved like a threshing machine, irresistible. Innards and limbs were tossed to the sky as they chewed through the opposition's defensive line, then scattered out to take care of the nimbler players. Once the champion's final player was left torsoless on the halfway line, the referees blew their whistles for the first time that half. There wasn't much point continuing, considering the state of both sides. Shell-shocked, they stood shaking every hand Ted's team thrust at them, accepting every shoulder shake before nervelessly dropping their whistles and walking off the pitch. The truth of what they'd witnessed percolated through the crowd. Now their bloodlust was slaked, the heady euphoria of victory curdled. A man who'd windmilled a rope of guts around his head let it slither to the ground, his hands going to his mouth as a whimper fell unnoticed from his lips. Down on the pitch, Ted and his team were throwing their coach in the air, laughing with wild abandon, oblivious to the faint sounds of sirens and helicopter blades, getting louder, closing in.
A little spicy. I shall have to have a word with our writers, get them to focus on some more worthy themes.
Daniel! Richard! What the fucking hell was that?
Oh,
fuck. Reality writes its bloody self.
Now look here, you snivelling pricks! You try to make a fool of me! What kind of formed over bullshit was that? You fucking prick!